You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Myanmar's junta jams the internet. Operation Night Scout looks like a highly targeted cyber espionage campaign delivered through a compromised supply chain. Sonic Wall Zero Day is being actively exploited in the wild. Strange You and Random You are filling a niche in the criminal-to-criminal market. Ben Yellen ponders whether the SolarWinds attack can be considered an act of war. Our guest, Jamie Brown from Tenable, on the National Cyber Director position and what it means for the Biden administration. Another data breach is associated with the Cellian FTA, and it's Groundhog Day, campers! From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. The internet has gone down throughout much of Myanmar, CyberScoop reports. The reasons for the outage are unclear, but the overwhelming likelihood is that the outage is a deliberate takedown by the junta military leaders installed in a coup d'etat over the weekend. Internet usage dropped by a good 75% Sunday, according to observations tweeted by NetBlocks, an NGO that operates an internet observatory. NetBlocks says, quote, "The pattern of disruption indicates centrally issued telecoms blackout order," end quote. Internet jamming has become a familiar feature of the contemporary style of coup d'etat. It's what seizing the newspapers would have been in 1850, what taking over the radio station would have been in the 1930s. ESET researchers have outlined a recently discovered software supply chain attack that's inflicting surveillance malware on online gamers who use Nox Player, an Android emulator used mostly to play mobile games on PCs. The security firm says that several distinct malware strains are being delivered to users in the form of maliciously crafted software updates. Two of the strains in use are familiar: Ghostrat, which is a keylogger and collector of other sensitive information, and Poison Ivy Rat, which appeared as a secondary infection. The producer of Nox Player, Hong Kong-headquartered Big Nox, told ESET that it hadn't been compromised itself and didn't avail themselves of the help the boys and girls from Bratislava offered. The campaign shows no signs of monetization, which leads ESET to conclude that some form of espionage is the point of the effort. They're calling the campaign Operation Night Scout. It seems to be a highly targeted campaign. ESET's telemetry told them that about 100,000 of their users had Nox Player installed, but of that group, only 5 were pushed a malicious update. The victims were in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Sri Lanka. What the operators behind Night Scout are after is mysterious. ESET said it was unable to find any correlations among the victims. NCC Group reports finding evidence that the recently discovered Sonic Wall Zero Day is now being actively exploited in the wild. They advise users to pay close attention to their logs. NCC Group is reluctant to share detailed indicators and warnings, but they suggest keeping an eye out for source IPs hitting management interfaces you would not expect. SonicWall says it expects to have a patch available today. Microsoft has been tracking the emails sent by the criminal infrastructure represented by StrangeU and RandomU, which Redmond says is robust enough to seem legitimate to many mail providers, while flexible enough to allow the dynamic generation of new domain names and remain evasive. It's sending out about 1 million malware-carrying emails a month. The infrastructure seems to be filling the criminal-to-criminal market gap that the Necor's botnet takedown temporarily opened. Microsoft says this proves that attackers are highly motivated to quickly adapt to temporary interruptions to their operations. The infrastructure as a service initially was seen delivering commodity malware, but since September it's risen in the criminal status system, having been adopted in September by both the Drydex and TrickBot operators. The cyber espionage campaign associated with the software supply chain for SolarWinds' Orion platform remains under investigation, with postmortems turning to fixes and might-have-beens. A Security Boulevard piece sketches an outline of third-party security programs. FCW reports that prospective Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas promised to review upgrades of the department's Einstein system, and ProPublica wonders why the U.S. government shelved the InToto system it paid for. Vulnerabilities in Excellion software, exploited earlier against data belonging to New Zealand's Central Bank and the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, has now hit the state auditor of the state of Washington, compromising the personal information of more than 1.5 million people who'd contacted the state about unemployment assistance. The state auditor is notifying victims and offering the usual sorts of help, like credit monitoring. Excellion says the vulnerabilities lie in an old legacy version of its product, Excellion FTA, that's now approaching end of life. The vendor says all known issues have now been patched and mitigation is underway. The incident has attracted a lot of attention from the security industry. And finally, hey, 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 happy Groundhog Day. The word from our Pennsylvania desk is that Punxsutawney Phil, in a socially distanced virtual ceremony from Gobbler's Knob, indeed saw his shadow. It spooked him. And so we've got 6 more weeks of winter. So hold off on spring until St. Patrick's Day or thereabout, campers. It's cold out there. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled.
Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
The recently passed National Defense Authorization Act includes the creation of the position of National Cyber Director. Joining me to discuss that role is Jamie Brown, Senior Director of Global Government Affairs at Tenable and Chair of the IT Sector's Coordinating Council.
Historically, in previous administrations, particularly in George Bush and Barack Obama's administration, there was a cyber director, or, you know, commonly referred to as a cyber czar, that was advising the president and had a central spot at the White House. It was not a at that time a Senate confirmed position, but the role there was to coordinate cybersecurity activities across the federal government. That position was maintained in the early part of the Trump administration, but then, you know, was they ended up ending the position when they switched national security advisors about midway through the administration. Congress had set up in the meantime a commission to study what are the best approaches to addressing these long-term, really comprehensive challenges of cybersecurity. And one of the key recommendations they made was we really do need to not only reinstall that position of the National Cybersecurity Director, but make it a permanent Senate-confirmed position, you know, one that has statutory authority, one that has to be approved by the Senate. And the thinking being that cybersecurity was such a cross-cutting challenge, it hit so many different agencies, different industry sectors, that you really needed someone in a centralized location, a single point of contact in order to coordinate the federal government's response to cybersecurity incidents, but also in terms of proactive strategy and planning for cybersecurity as well.
I've seen some reporting that President Biden is likely to appoint Jen Easterly to this position.
Right.
Is that still where things are tracking? And what's your take on her?
That is what we have heard as well. You know, I have not heard or have not seen sort of official confirmation or have not yet. I don't think President Biden has officially appointed Jen Easterly, but we think that she would be an outstanding choice. You know, she has excellent experience both in the public and private sector, which again is extremely important given the interdependencies of both the private sector and government when it comes to addressing cybersecurity challenges. So her experience is something that will bring, you know, I think tremendous gravitas to that role and a lot of credibility in working both with government and private sector stakeholders. I think this SolarWinds compromise has opened our eyes to a lot of important activities that have to take place. And one of the key areas that we hope that the National Cyber Director will focus on to be better prepared for future type attacks is pushing through a risk-based vulnerability management approach throughout the government. And then prioritizing the way that you go about remediating the gaps or the vulnerabilities that you have based on real-time contextual factors. You know, what is the severity of a given vulnerability that you have in your systems? How important is it with respect to where it is, you know, located within your systems? And then, you know, also, is that type of vulnerability currently being attacked by bad actors? You know, all of these things are going to be extremely important moving forward, both to mitigate, you know, against current attacks, but also to be prepared for future ones. That'll be a key role of the cyber director as well.
That's Jamie Brown. He's Senior Director of Global Government Affairs at Tenable.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance, for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Ben Yellen. He's from the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Also my co-host over on the Caveat podcast. Hey, Ben, good to have you back.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am doing well, thanks. Interesting article. This is from the Lawfare blog. The title is the SolarWinds cyber attack an act of war? It is, if the United States says it is. Now, this caught my eye because it seems to me like the overall consensus has been that the SolarWinds situation was not an act of war, that it's espionage, but not an act of war. But this article takes perhaps or explores a contrarian view here.
Yeah, this article is fascinating for a number of reasons. First of all, that is a contrarian view as to the attack itself. This article gets into questions of whether we should make these decisions based on domestic laws or based on international law. So the previous administration kind of ignored international law. They were an America First administration. What this article is suggesting is that we could have proper justification under international law to declare this an act of war. So Chapter 51 of the United Nations Charter recognizes the inherent right to self-defense. In response to an act of war, the Latin term is casus belli. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. but basically, if you are attacked in a surprise attack, international law justifies a response. That is self-defense in its purest form. At least that's, you know, the thinking behind that section of the charter. And that allows a country or a state, if we're speaking more broadly, to exercise self-defense to make sure that nobody else gets hurt, to make sure, to limit harm against our domestic tranquility. Yeah. And that's what this article is encouraging, that we should consider this an act of war under international law, akin perhaps to something like Pearl Harbor, where there was a surprise attack on our physical infrastructure. I don't think anybody would dispute that that was an act of war. If, you know, SolarWinds as a cyber attack was as extensive as is reported, certainly the impact on our critical infrastructure could be potentially just as severe. So it's just a really interesting article. I think using international law in some quarters is pretty disfavored in this country, just because, you know, there's kind of a skepticism of why should we be listening to these, you know, these international bodies that, why should they carry the force of law? Who elected them? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you'd put yourself on firmer ground on the world stage if you can justify your actions, and it seems like we're going to take actions in response to this attack, using a portion of the UN Charter. So I just thought it was a really interesting argument.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, what you think about the idea that if you come at this from the espionage point of view, and, you know, I always try to, and often unsuccessfully, try to put these into real-world terms. But, you know, suppose the United States found that there were a whole bunch of spies who'd been placed in organizations around the world, you know, and these spies were going through filing cabinets to get secrets from organizations, from federal organizations, private organizations, you know, that sort of thing. People doing spying, right?
Right.
Espionage.
Right.
Would the discovery of that, would we consider that to be an act of war? Or would we just say, ooh, espionage?
I mean, I guess there's a different, espionage isn't to the same extent an act of war.
Right. Nobody dies.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't meet that definition under the UN Charter. I think, right. what I would say is that that's not necessarily the proper analog here because of the concrete damage that could have been done through the SolarWinds attack. So it's not just spying. It, you know, if you're destroying networks or you're stealing information, you know, or you're threatening our critical infrastructure, then that goes beyond espionage. So I don't think it would, you know, if it were just pure spying, I don't think under this definition that would be, you know, an act of warfare that would justify a precision-based response.
What if the spies were leaving pipe bombs in the filing cabinets behind, right?
Exactly, like exactly. That. I mean, that's the scenario that I think we have to consider, and I think that's sort of the perspective of the Biden administration. We don't know exactly what they're going to do to respond to this attack, but early indications are that they see it as sort of, if not a quasi act of aggression, an act of aggression, and that it will justify a precision-based response.
Worthy of some response.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, an interesting article for sure. It's over on Lawfare. It's titled, "Is the SolarWinds Cyber Attack an Act of War?" It is, if the United States says it is. Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Bring out your best. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of DataTribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Guru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.